Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're speaking with Chris Thompson about how to run your best 10K.
It's a great distance, Rick.
It is, actually. I think it might be my favourite because it's a little bit longer than a 5K, obviously. It's twice the distance, actually.
Oh, gosh. Straight into some maths. All right.
But you can have a bash at it, do, you know, put it all out there for 10K, and you could, and then you could have another go, you know, the following month. And I think it's a great combination of speed and endurance that's required. I think you have to be quite a good all-round runner to run your best 10K. And I think the training's a bit more varied as well than it would be, say, for a marathon distance. And
have you ever done a training block directly in preparation for a 10K?
Yes, once. And it resulted in a 10K PB, surprisingly. But yeah, I think, to be honest, I've always, even when I've done marathon training, I think it's probably looked more like traditional 10K training for most people, i.e. like quite low mileage, quite high quality in there. Probably more like, if we're doing like the percentages, like maybe 30 or 40% quality and 60% kind of like lower aerobic stuff. So yeah, I targeted the, oh God, I can't remember what it's called now. It will come to me though. It will come to me. It was 10K down on the South Coast and yeah, very flat. And yeah, felt good actually. It is a hard distance in terms of like a 5K, right? You have to be, you're going to be hurting at halfway. And I think
It's a sort of, in the sliding scale of distances, 5K is incredibly popular because parkrun. People leap to the marathon straight away because they feel they should. Half marathon is probably statistically the most popular distance. And then 10K just sits there doing its thing. And I feel
a bit undervalued.
Maybe undervalued. Yeah.
It's a great platform, isn't it? I mean, in the pros, like obviously a great 10,000 meter time often eventually leads to someone going into the marathon. I think we're seeing that with, like, hopefully going to see that with Ailish McColgan about like how she can convert great 10K running into great marathon running. And you're right, probably not enough people do it, do they? We leap to the marathon. We want to say, oh, we've run a half marathon or a marathon. Whereas a 10K is a great event in itself, but also as a kind of platform to running quicker over.
It's a gateway distance, isn't it?
It's a gateway distance, mate. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly that. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Try this 5K, everyone. Oh, that's delicious, isn't it? Oh, well, here you go. Here's a gateway distance, 10K. Oh, no. Now I'm completely addicted. Oh, that's it.
It's going to be the half next. It'll be half
next.
Oh,
cheeky half. Yep.
So, so our guest this week is Chris Thompson. I think he's one of Britain's best distance runners, isn't he? He's got to be.
Yes.
100%. He's won silver in the 10,000 metres at 2010 European Championships, three-time winner of the Great South Run, that's 10-miler, and won the 2021 British Marathon Trial a month shy of his 40th birthday and celebrated in just incredible style. I think everyone remembers the kind of finish line celebration, and we could see what it meant to him. So I think it would be great to get him on to talk 10K running because he's so good over a variety of distances, and I think he's a great talker as well. So should we get on our Guest of the Week then?
Guest of the Week! Sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
So our guest this week is one of Britain's best distance runners. He's won silver in the 10,000 metres at the 2010 European Championships, is a three-time winner of the Great South Run, and won the 2021 British Marathon Trial a month shy of his 40th birthday. But he's here specifically to talk about how to run your best 10K. So Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, absolutely great to have you on. We want to just talk a little bit about 10Ks, which is just like one of the distances that you're really good at. So
Before that, do you know what? This is not something I was going to say, like for the intro. That's not common. I don't think it's common knowledge, and even I have to remind myself. Is I actually I did own the V35 British record for 10K until Mo took it off me. Like about, I think it was last year or the year before. I forget, but I still own the 5,000 meter British record, which. Number of times I tried to get the senior ones and I missed it by seconds, and then Mo annihilated it. But I did have the 10K British record for a couple of years, and then but I still have the 5K, and Mo's now too old, so hopefully I'll have that for a while. Yeah,
I mean, it was in a very, very brief moment of me and Rick doing some research, we did look at your record, and I was actually like, oh, I'd forgotten that.
He was all right.
European what?
He was an all right runner.
There was Europeans. There's all sorts of things popped up. I was like, oh yeah, he's not just the guy who was really happy to qualify for the marathon.
Hang on, he's quite old as well. He's been around since the 90s. What's going on here? Yeah. It's. I think I'm. I have to admit, I do feel like I'm one of those weird runners where, because after Q, when I qualified. It was like, I think some people didn't realize I'd been to an Olympics before and I'd been around a while. It was like, oh, it was like suddenly this runner that's, I don't know, has been working all his life and took up running a couple of years, which I know there's what's the name that, I forget, the lockdown.
Rose. Marathon, oh yeah, Rose Harvey, is it?
Yeah, like fantastic story, what she achieved what she's going to go on to achieve is going to be incredible, I'm sure. But unfortunately, I have been doing this for a while, and so I kind of got lumped into a scenario where I was like, yeah, no, this is... I'd like to think I was quite a serious contender to make the team. So it wasn't such a shock. The shock was I spent the week before being up till stupid o'clock with a young child. That was the crazy thing. But yeah, no, I mean, my first British best was in 1998. So I've represented Britain across three decades. Four decades. 90s, noughties. Yeah, four decades. So it's it's a weird career when you grow up with Mo as being as good as he was and is, should I say, and you've had your Paulers and you're kind of in the background a little bit to what these superstars can do. But yeah, I've done the odd bit that I'm kind of proud of, but but you got to search hard. Thank goodness for the internet and Google. It's there if you look.
Right, go on, Henrik.
Yes. Oh, right, sorry. You know, you're right. I think there's. I'm glad we had that. I'm glad we did a bit of that, because I think the preamble is really important here. When we talk about 10K training, though. What do you think are some of the key elements? I'm not looking for you to put together a complete plan here, but just some of the things to consider.
Most events you're training for when it comes to middle, long distance, and I think the only event you kind of move away from this philosophy would be marathon and maybe half, but certainly track, middle and long distance. You've got this philosophy of trying to train over distance, under distance, and at pace-wise, that is, and try and cover the pace that you're going to effectively train at. And I think 10,000 meters, I try to dedicate in a week. I don't want to say time, but an equal amount of effort, should I put it, rather than time, to running, training like I'm running for a half marathon. Training like I'm running for a 5K and training like I'm running for a 10K within a week. So the flavor tries to cover all bases. And then you kind of, as you home in towards the race day of the 10K, you focus more and more in on specific 10K work. And so it's kind of, even when you break down sessions, into an actual session on a particular day, there's going to be that thought process of playing with the speeds, and those speeds that you play with, that you aim to run at, are going to be based around slightly slower than race pace, slightly faster, and at race pace, and mixing it all up. And that kind of Swedish, I think it's a Swedish term, isn't it, fartlek, of speed play. And so I think a simple answer at this point would be trying to it's an equal amount of effort to dedicate to those three different components rather than saying time, because you need obviously an 8 mile tempo at half marathon effort is going to take you longer than running, you know, 20 minutes at 5K effort, but the effort is still the same. It's just the amount of time. So that's why I use the word effort.
Were there any key sessions that you always went to or used to sort of gauge when you were ready to go for like a race day?
There's two different approaches I would have to 10K running. Is one is I'm trying to run a time trial, run the fastest time, and one I'm getting ready for a championship race, which takes into account it's going to be a fast last mile. So take championship 10K out for a second, because I would look at that slightly different in the middle of a summer. But if I'm looking at a fast time trial of a 10K, I would look at, for me personally, and some people vary, a key session that would be around for me about 10 to 12 days before that particular race day. Some people do it as late as 7 days before. It depends on the type of athlete you are as in terms of how you recover. But I would use 10 to 12 days out, and I would look at running. I've used a couple of different variations, but one of my favorite ones would be 12 times a K of 90 seconds, and I would alternate paces. So I would use, so when I've run 27:30, that would be my baseline. So that's 2:45 per K. So I would look to, I sometimes do these key sessions at 5,000 feet because I invariably come down from altitude. And so you adjust the time, whether you're at altitude or at sea level. But I would try to hit, if I'm at 5,000 feet, 2:45, which is my target pace as my baseline. And I would run 12 of them, and I would try and run a 2:50K and then a 2:40K and alternate between that for 12 reps. And if I can, and the key thing for me is always, if I run that session in control, I know I'm ready. If I'm busting a gut to run it, I know I probably should set my aim a little bit back a bit. And so it's all about that target race pace that tells me I'm ready. So if I use that as the more important, because obviously the race day is that you can't use the race day as the information. The information is that 10 day before, 10, 12 day. And so if I work back from that, everything is geared around actually getting ready for that session. So I'm not in a weird way, I'm trying to get ready for a session rather than a race. Because if I complete that session and I complete it comfortably, I know I'm ready to race. And so for the 8 to 12 weeks before that, I'm trying to, as I said before, dedicate time to a half marathon, dedicate time to 5K training, and dedicate time, and I home in towards that session so that specific race pace. So I've got 66 laps in my mind and how I break that down. But that's the kind of the meat of what I'm trying to do. And there's obviously, you can break that down like you can the atom into so many specific moments, but I won't do that unless you ask me specific things on it.
On an atomic level, Chris, could you please?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Listen, I can say some stupid things, and that's probably one of them.
Lots of our listeners, Chris, will be regular park runners. And I wonder what you think of how accurate a gauge can your 5K time be in terms of what you can run for 10K? Do you think you can be lulled into a sort of slight false sense of security if you can run, say, a sub 20 park run? Doesn't necessarily mean you're going to run sub 40 for 10K.
I think it's a tough question to ask, because I think that it is a lot further because it's double the distance, but it's not. And so I think you can make pretty good assumptions about what you can run for a 10K when you're running certain things for a 5. It just depends if you're, I think where it gets tricky is if you're effectively training under distance and then 5K is actually racing over distance to what you train, then it might get a bit difficult. So if effectively you're training four or 5K specifically, I think there's a good chance you're probably doing enough running to get close. And if you don't quite, if you, like you said, use the 20 and 40 minutes, you might fall short, but it won't be too much. It's when you've got like a, you know, I'm using an extreme example, a 1500 meter runner is training specifically for 1500 meters. And they just one day, oh, I'll do a part run for five. They will struggle to, they might struggle. So you, but again, invariably people that run 5Ks are probably doing enough running. Cause again, today you've got, you can get a lot of benefits out of just steady running. If you're training for a 5K, but you've got the steady running, it can carry you because it's a 5K to 10K is there's a large aerobic shift in what you're in requirements to a 10. If that makes sense. And so you know, 5K is one of those awkward distances. It's not quite a 3K, which is VVO2, which is a very almost anaerobic event, but you're trying to drag it out to get to 5K. A 10K, you've got to spend a lot of time, you're going to spend a lot of the race actually aerobically functioning. A large percentage of what you're doing is aerobically functioning, hence why steady running can have a big impact on it.
Do you think that the mental side of the stepping up to the 10K, or certainly as you say, you're not ultimately flat out the whole time, you're just kind of on the edge, you're kind of aerobically functioning. How do you use a sort of the mental strength side of it to kind of get to the finish line with those events? Because sometimes it's a bit, the shorter it is, the kind of less time you have to hold on, really. So you kind of 10K can be one of those ones where it's actually like, oh, this is really hurting.
Yeah, I think from, because I have to go back a little bit to when I was a kid, when I think about these kind of things, because I trained under a guy called Mick Woods, and who's still coached today at Aldershot. And one of the things from an early age was you almost went to training with an attitude of you go out as hard as you can until you fall off a cliff. And quite often that led to blowing up, failing, till eventually you found that kind of internal feedback and mechanism of when you stood on the line, it became quite instinctive. I've got a 5K today, and you almost instinctively knew where that line was of going out as hard as you could, but you could hang on. And I think, so for me, mentally, how I approach races, and it's not, I don't think it's a particularly common thing, this, is I just kept pushing as hard as I could and almost teasing the event. Even with a half marathon when I first did it, I thought, how hard can I go and for how long? And if I blow up, I blow up. But next time I'll learn, see if I can get that bit further. And I think that's something that I did from a young age of, I'm much more comfortable going out, almost crossing over the red line for that particular distance and just hanging on. Whereas other athletes are like to finish stronger, which is just as good a way of doing it. It's almost, I feel like you learn how best you function for that event, and everyone's different. So I think mentally speaking, I think anyone that's starting out with any distance is try and go into it with an open mind of, you know what, I might have to do this a few times before I find my optimum performance. That's okay, because the chances of you nailing a 5-10 half marathon first time out and coming away going, oh, I bonked, or well, I couldn't have got any more out of myself, I timed that perfectly, is so unlikely. Not in a defeatist attitude, it's just we all have to go through that process of learning. Mo didn't run his fastest 10K first time out. I didn't. It's very rare that you run your fastest race. Ironically, the only event that sometimes it happens is the marathon, but that's usually linked to other factors like injuries or things like that. But certainly, I think the purity of 5 and 10 and the half is to be brave enough to discover where you lie. And I think you can develop a really beautiful relationship with your own red line and your own coping mechanisms of how I can improve. And you can go on a bit of a journey. And I tell you, it sounds a bit like a crossover and a bit philosophical when it comes to life, but it's something that I found that, and it relates back to Kew Gardens, of sometimes you can be dealt a hand where you think, this is impossible, I'm too tired, or I can't do this, or I can't do that. And you learn, sometimes you actually can pull it off. You can pull off the impossible, and you can start relating that into life. That's where I think running, so I love it, is as a life skill of, you know, you learn that failure is part of success. You learn that you really discover a lot about yourself and you can apply that. And that's where I think mentally, when it comes to races, you think, right, this is unique. This is a new journey. Let's see where this goes. Slightly deep answer, but yeah, it's
great. It's a great answer.
I think it's a fantastic answer. In the fact that as a sort of a multi-combo response to it, there's the sort of that modern day plans don't really incorporate failure into anything that they're doing. Like everyone talks about when you're training, there's no part of it which just says go hard and see what happens. There's, you know what I mean? There's,
yeah.
And the other bit is that, and this is maybe I'm overthinking this myself, but perhaps people aren't willing to sacrifice themselves so much because they don't want to present themselves in the global social media world that we live in as sort of having not run the race perfectly every time. So it's kind of like a twofold thing. I think that people are sort of perhaps told not to fail as much and are unwilling to fail at racing because they don't want to look bad at running.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I think quite often when people ask me why, how am I still running, how am I still doing it, the reality is because I'm not embarrassed to look stupid. I've turned up to many, many races. Apologies if you can hear my son. He's a bit tired.
It all adds to it.
Exactly. I've had so many days where I'm, you know, I could quite easily feel protective of my image or who I think I am and what I think. And it beautifully links back to you guys looking up and going, oh, he's better than I realized, because you're fighting an invisible, a mythical version of yourself, because that's what social media is. You're only trying to present the best you. And it's that kind of balance of some people use it as a way of going, I'm showing themselves to be raw. But what ultimately really matters is yourself. And when you're at home and you're not presenting yourself to anyone and you're comfortable in the fact that, you know what, you can go to bed at night and it doesn't matter how the day's gone. You go home happy and settled, knowing that, he's going past the room, you don't harshly judge yourself when you're not hanging on to what others may or may think of you, because ultimately that's not going to put you to sleep every night. What's going to put you to sleep is you're happy with yourself. And so, and I think that's why I've kept going, because there's, you know, 14, I had an operation on my Achilles, and I went through, if you look back at it, I went through 3-4 years of hell to get back. And the number of people that shamelessly would criticize me to my face or behind my back and all this. And you just have to smile, because, you know, if you're looking for acceptance of a bad day, that's not long-term going to work. What's going to work is you knowing yourself, where you're at, where you're trying to get to. And that's the driving factor. And again, with going back to Q, like I had zero, genuinely, I finished, I had zero thought other than I'm so proud of myself, Gemma, my coach and the team that helped me. And not one thought about what anyone else had thought of it. Not in a horrible way. I just didn't think anyone would have cared. It didn't register to me that, and I remember a guy, the Athletic Weekly guy, and he came over and said, your finish has gone viral already. I went, what do you mean? I had no recollection of the finish. I just had no process of it. All I could think about was I was going to the Olympics. I pulled it off. All the hard work to get there. And I knew the struggles and everything that I had to keep believing to get there, when I knew no one else is going to believe it. And no one, and it, it was just, it took me a good 2 or 3 days to process, oh, people are interested. Like, it just didn't. But that's because I just built this wall of just self-contentment in a non-horrible way at all. It was just, and I still do it now. Like, you know, you go out, ultimately going out, I've just been out in the, excuse me, pissing rain. I don't know if I can say that. And in the gym, I'm on my own. I train on my own. I don't have a training partner anymore because he's moved to Liverpool. It's probably something I said. And it's quite a miserable training process day to day. But if I think about that and think about what everyone else has got and the help they've got, then you get down. But you think, no, actually, this is cool and I'm happy in my own skin. If someone's there, it's there. It's just, I don't know. But that's, you can't relay that on social media. It's not the world we live in now. The world, it's almost like, again, being philosophical for a second, the world we're living in now is becoming about controlling other people and controlling the world around us. I don't believe in that. I believe you control your own emotions first, and you project what you project that, not I'm going to tell you how to talk to me. That's, you know, you let people be people and then it's up to you to deal with that. And that's why running, I think you can't run away from it. You're right. If your body's struggling in a race or in a session, what, you're going to have a go at your body? No, you develop that relationship with your body. We go, let's work together on this. And that's kind of that, you become very much realizing you're in control of your own destiny and you're in control of your own happiness more than you realize. God, this has gone deep, isn't it? Jeez, look at me.
No, it's great, Chris.
Look at me, go.
Talk about 10K and we're into happiness. A couple of things you said that I think are really, really interesting. And I've heard you talk about this before. And I think it's based a little bit on training with some East African runners and maybe speaking with some East African runners as well. And in terms of, like, as you said, your race strategy of pushing hard, maybe pushing harder than you think is actually sustainable at the time. Do you think actually that's more a tactic associated with the great East African runners, maybe something that European runners don't tend to, we're maybe more conservative in terms of racing. And also in terms of age as well, do you think actually that European runners sort of write themselves off after maybe mid 30s?
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. I mean, that is spot on. It is. So when I trained in America with the Oregon Track Club, obviously one of the best things about that was we had, runners from all over the world in the group, which is a really, if I was making a group tomorrow, I'd want Europeans, Africans, Americans, UK, I'd want all the different flags. I think it's a really good, culturally, it really helps bring everyone on because everyone can bring something different. And there was a girl called Sally Kipyego and her husband, Kev Chalima, and I obviously trained more with Kev, and I would hang on their words because they had this laissez-faire attitude of when they were on it, they were on it. And when they were off, it was like they were horizontal. It honestly, they would go out their easy runs or their jogs. It looked like they were jogging slower than what Tom Bosworth would be walking. Like they were so on it, and Tom on a, just walking around the shops for that matter. It was just, they were so comfortable in their own skin of I'll turn up, my coach will tell me what to do, and I will just give myself to that program and switch off. And one of the things she said with age, she goes, you Westerners, you put barriers on age all the time. You just assume something before it's happened when it comes to age. And I thought, you're right. Because when I was young, I went, I'm too young. And then suddenly I went from being too young to being too old. There was no middle ground. And I'm like, what am I doing? So even now, like, people will go, you're 41, but it comes with a, like, when you're going to stop? And I'm like, well, when my body tells me to, not when I hit an age. Because, I mean, it's running truly free of age and it's quite a liberating thing to be around that people that do that. And Sally was massive. I mean, she ended up being Olympic medalist. And I have to admit, I put my hand up leading into 2012. I thought of all the barriers that would stop me was And I thought that was a good thing because that would make me try and improve all those things, i.e. I need to work on my finish. I need to be stronger. I need to be this. But what that ended up doing was injuring me, because actually I forgot the biggest thing, which was the other side of the coin of being able to train hard, but also switch off and not let those things consume me to the point of stressing I was doing everything I needed to do, and being comfortable that there I was getting that balance. And I do think between 2010 and 2012 I became too obsessed at trying to fix my what I perceived to be my weaknesses, and as I've gotten older, I've gotten, if you'd put, and again it's the age old comment of, if I had my brain now when I was younger, it's you know, but again, that's why I think now, I think, well, I may not be 31, I'm 41, but I'm maximizing myself way more than I ever have, which for me is the important bit.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
And I think when things like children arrive on the scene and your time becomes so much more precious in what you do, you become, or certainly with athletes that we've spoken to previously on the matter, your efficiencies become so much greater, your time management and all the things, when you kind of, you realize perhaps that your training before was taking up so much time, but there was a lot of faff as well. Whereas you kind of like single out all of that straight away because you haven't got time to do that.
Yeah. And I think also that, but also you realize where you're getting the biggest bang for your buck. Because there is a process of, you know, that one of the biggest advantages of being, again, it's not an age thing. It's how much I've been running for 24, 25 years. That's the important number in terms of how to look at training. And so there's a lot of background running in there that means that I can afford to take out certain bits and bobs because there is a body of work there. But also you just get to know what's going to bring you on the quickest, and what's going to give you the biggest return on investment. And I think, I know, like Andy Vernon, I'm sure you know that guy. I mean, he put so much emphasis on the long run on a Sunday, and he wanted it to be hilly. And that was the thing that gave him the biggest bang in his week. For me, it's getting on the track and doing a 10,000 meter type session, like 10 by a K. And it's, I come out of it and that's the biggest jump I get in my body. And so it's knowing your biggest return on investment. If I've only got an hour before boy wonder needs to, you know, he's going to probably get up or he needs to be fed or something. You make that hour, you know, Andy would go out and run as hard as he could for an hour. I would warm up for 10 minutes, do 10 by a K and jog home for 10 minutes. It's horses for courses.
Right, can we talk about kit, Chris? In terms of what people should be looking for in a 10K shoe and also just general kit advice, is it pretty much the same as a marathon or is it quite different?
If you've asked me that question 4 or 5 years ago, I'd say it'd be very different. but now, obviously with the super shoes and the way things have changed, it's... I think you're seeing a lot more athletes wearing the same shoe on the road, for instance, whether they're running a marathon, 10K, or even 5K. And 4 or 5 years ago, when I was in my back in the day, I'd have a different shoe for the whether it's concrete, gravel, depending on the distance. It would, you know, I wouldn't wear the same marathon shoe certainly, or for a 10K, it'd be very different. But now it's again, there's obviously no shame in saying that, you know, obviously I'm sponsored by On, and one of the On Running, and one of the things that as I've gotten older and with the nature of the way shoes are, I'm very much involved in developing and helping develop shoes and how and where it's going. So I'm learning a heck of a lot, ironically, of what is and what's potentially going to happen. Because and one of the big discussions we've been having is, can we learn from the fact that people used to use different shoes for different races, and whether there's still a relevance there. You know, if you're running a 10, do we need a bit more cushion, or do we need a bit more of the carbon sort of kick, if you will, or do we need more cushion for the marathon? Or, you know, is there a subtle difference? Because at the moment, I think it's become almost one shoe fits all road races. But on the on the track again, this is weird actually. I actually wore, believe it or not, for the 10K the same spike as my wife Gemma wore for the 800 meters, which is incredibly weird thing to say, because that doesn't make any sense from back in the day. People would have a more supportive, almost a flat like shoe for the 10. So a lot of athletes used to get flats and have brands put spikes in. So it was called Splats, the nickname they got given, because they wanted that extra cushion for the 10. And that's where I think the new spikes and the new spikes have helped the most, the 5 and the 10,000 meters, because they've provided that extra bounce and cushion with the spikes, which is something that athletes have always been pushing for historically. Whereas middle distance, they like to feel the track a bit more. They want a little bit less between the track and their foot, so they can feel and grab the ground. And so there's still that concept when it comes to 10,000 meters. I would on the road, I would imagine, certainly for me, I'd like to feel the ground a bit more than I would in a marathon. In a marathon, it's just pure cushion and pure support. But in terms of kit, again, it depends on where you are, what you're doing, the temperature and all that jargon. I mean, I've run in 33 degrees heat in a 10K, and I'd rather be running in just my pants. And then I've run in conditions where I'd run in full leggings, and it really does depend, I think. The beautiful thing with a marathon is you can rip stuff off and take it. I mean, the people tend to wear a lot more on the start line, and a lot of marathons tend to be in colder conditions. It's more about where you're training is the issue. That's where I struggled with London being in October. I was training for the UK summer, and I struggled with that. Struggled a lot.
It was so hot, wasn't it? Yeah, it was like high 30s multiple times.
I think it hit 41, I think, at its peak. It was crazy.
What would you say would be the classic 10K mistakes that people make when they first get to the distance? And we've talked about how mistakes are good now, so you can just go straight in.
I think it is difficult to be brave in the 10, because that word of, if you're running 5Ks, you double the distance sounds a long way. So I think being brave enough to attack the first half is again, it's not a mistake, as we've said, but it's the thing that probably people come away afterwards going, oh, I could have been a bit braver in that. I think probably more so that way than the other way. Other mistakes, I think, again, it depends on the type of runner, but I would say, I feel like athletes probably, and I did this, I feel like not looking at a lap counter is helpful. So you can, with a 10K, the temptation is to mentally think of like you would on a 5 or a 15, where you use the number of laps as a motor, you know, as a way of gauging effort. Whereas I think 10K, especially on the track, is something where you've got to use the first half of spacing out and breaking it down a bit different. So I'll use, if I'm using a 10K, I will use laps as a time, more time than anything, right? I've got 8 minutes to go, 9 minutes to go, whatever. In a 10K, I try and break it, to try and get it down to manageable numbers rather than 25 laps. I think of it as 6 miles. So I'm using manageable numbers to help myself relax in the first half. And I think getting that right blend of relaxing but going hard enough is difficult. And I think breaking down numbers or time or using things that are a bit more manageable numbers, I always prefer singular digits. Like even in a marathon, I would try and break things down into like 3 mile reps or something like that, just to make it feel more manageable. Anything else with the 10? I think again, I wouldn't say this was a mistake necessarily, but certainly for my first ever 10K on the track, I thought too much about my finishing time that I was aiming for. And I don't think that's necessarily something that you should do. I think a good idea would be to just be open-minded enough just to run. Just do it. I think that's something that's quite handy to do, is not going into it with times and just expectations.
Like maybe no watch or like no data.
My rule is don't wear a watch anyway. I mean, I have done when I wasn't certain if I was going to get time feedback from the course, but if there's time feedback, especially in a track, you shouldn't. For me, it's don't wear a watch, because then it stops. Because the temptation is to constantly look. You do all kinds of things when you're tired. If I'm out on an hour, yesterday I was out for an hour and 45 run, and I reckon I looked at my watch every minute, and I'm going, I've got to stop. What am I doing? Stop it. But it's just, stop it. So it's a process of weaning yourself out of these things. So I'm still building back into training, and I know that's a tick I need to, you know, I'm not immune from doing things like that. I'm not going to, most of the time when I say don't do this is because I've done it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm a parent now. I'm a parent, so I can say that. Do as I say, not as I do. I can say that now as a dad. So in the immediate, I'm actually running a marathon in less than 2 weeks. But it's not as a all out effort. I'm going to Cayman Island to run their event. I did it a few years ago. It was like a prize for first place that I ran Richmond Run Festival. And then do you know Dan Nash?
Yes, the athlete.
He's going out doing the half, and I'm going to do the marathon as a kind of a long run, hard long run. So that's kind of the loose kind of. It will go on my power of 10, so I have to say it's a race. And then but I'm working back from London Marathon in April is at the moment is the plan. There's a few races that I want to use to get ready for that. I'm kind of being full transparency, I'm in the moment I haven't gone away and left my son for any, apart from the Olympics, for any length of time. And I'm toying with the idea that I might spend a bit of time before London just to have full recovery and focus on the marathon, which emotionally would be quite a hard thing to do. But I'm toying with whether I do that or not, or whether I stay at home. So that's kind of the difficult thing, because it should be, the Olympic window should be opening up soon. It's usually the 1st of Jan the year before, and so I do want to give myself the best chance to run, because I still believe I can run some pretty handy times. I mean, this year I didn't run a marathon because of one reason or another we don't need to go into because it's too painful. But I did do some good stuff in the background training wise. And so I kind of want to give myself the best chance I can. And that will probably involve giving myself up. Because again, the second London was, I just got ill from my boy. It's just unlucky. No one's fault. It's just, he's at nursery, comes back, got a snivel and it wiped me out for 2 weeks, game over. So, you know, just taking out that kind of a risk. So that's what I'm looking at. And then as far as this beyond that, I've toyed with, and again, this is because of the super shoes. I've thought about going back on the track and running a 10K just to see, because I believe the amount of time I think they give you and what I think I could run, I think would be worth it based on my rough calculations, but of what I think, you know, in old shoes I could run, therefore what new shoes could do. And I put them on for the first time on some new super shoes, because obviously I wasn't a priority because I'm running road. And I put them on the other week. I was like, gee whiz, like it's a different world. And I was like, I just came off going, I want to run okay. I just want to see what I could do.
We went to did one of their OAC launch things in Zurich.
Okay, yeah.
I went over and they had some of the early models of their new Spike out to look at. Yeah, and it's just, yeah, you can just see the development coming on so fast now, just in terms of what they're presenting and what other brands are doing, obviously, as well. And the changing in times that you've seen on the track. I mean, you know, there's a whole different argument there about performance and shoes and tech and stuff. But yeah, I think that'd be really interesting just to see, just like a little experiment.
Well, exactly. I think it would, because again, when I've had conversations with my core team members and we talk about, well, what do I need to do to run? Primarily, we talk about running a fast marathon. And one of the things is keeping myself mechanically sound. And to do that, doing a 10K hard would be a good process to help with that. Because let's just say, I don't know, I ran 28:30 for 10K, just for argument's sake. I mean, that would be a handy speed to have in your pegs to then try and train for a marathon. I wouldn't need to run that quick, but it would be. To be honest, if I did try it, I believe I could run a heck of a lot quicker than that in these shoes. So it would be an experiment to run a lot quicker than that. But it would be a useful process to go through to complement other things I'm doing. But yeah, like you say, on one of the things I like about working with On is, again, how much they include the athletes in the process, how much they listen and how much they've involved. And again, like you say, I went across to, during the Europeans, they had invited a lot of people over to effectively talk about what they've been up to and how they're trying to develop shoes and the process they've been through. And I think it is exciting that they include people in that process and that journey, because it's become more relevant again. I mean, it was we've kind of had this seismic jump in performance of shoes. It was before, people, I think, probably were more bamboozled by the colour of the shoes or the design of it rather than the performance wise, because they were relatively all performing the same. But now it's like it's a topic again, and quite a lot of brands will be quite closed off to talking about it, because it's all, you know, I want the next big boom moment of this shoe, whereas On's attitude is very much just, yeah, this is what we're doing, this is what we're up to, this is just what we're about. And I quite like that, because I've been involved in a lot more behind the scenes stuff, so to speak, than any other moment in my life. Which again, when I think about my next steps and moving on in my life, and I retire from running, it feels a lot more empowering to know that you can have other skills and understand a lot more. And I'm not just a really good looking runner. Do you know what I mean?
You'll always have your modelling, Chris. You'll always have your modelling.
Always got that to fall back. Always got that to fall back on.
Hey, well, look, they sponsored. They were sponsored. They sponsored the night of the 10K PBs, didn't they?
Yeah, mm-hmm. See, look, this is all the stars are aligning. Yeah.
This could be you in a new shoe.
You at the night of the 10Ks.
That V40 British record, God, you'd be knocking minutes off it.
Well, it's funny, like, and that's where it's the dilemma, because obviously London Marathon is like a few weeks before it. And that's where it's like, that's where kind of painful of that. But yeah, no, because like, yeah, you're exactly right. There's a lot there to link it all nicely together. And if I was it, I was half thinking about it, well, this year. I don't know when this goes out, but this year in terms of 22 earlier on. But again, hazards of my boy, I bulged a dish in my back and that put me out for 3 weeks and that was that. But yeah, no, you're right. There is a series of stars that would be nice, but then there's London that gets in the way. But to be honest, I'll be 42 then. 42, 43, it's no different again. And the age, so if I waited another year, it wouldn't matter. But there is
some temptation there to do it. Yeah.
There's a lot of to be honest, again, and this is the crazy thing. There's a lot, I didn't think this would be the case like 10, 15 years ago. There's so much, like when I sit down and think of what am I going to do, I get excited at the thought of. Because I've kind of, again, I've let go of what my PBs are because they're kind of irrelevant now. It's in a lot of ways. And so I kind of, I never thought I'd be excited at the thought of running a 10K on the track. Whether I will or not, I don't know. I might not do it. But I never thought I'd be excited about it, even though I don't think I'm going to run a PB, which is cool because that shows a love for running, which has changed a bit. Because if I, again, hands up, honesty, I wasn't in love with running at the beginning. I was in love with the friendships and I was in love with how hard I could push myself, and I never really appreciated the benefits that running gave me. And as I've gotten older, that switched a bit, and now I can enjoy like the thought of, you know, the success of the challenge that is relative to my situation, which is nice.
Chris, thanks so much for coming on the Run of Your podcast, talking 10Ks but also philosophy and your modeling career.
Well, that's the important bit. I need to
get that message back out there.
That reminds me, I need to get back to Gucci actually about next week.
That on Gucci collaboration that's coming soon. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, we look forward to the on Gucci 10k night of 10k PBs.
yeah, thank you for having me on. Thank you, appreciate it.
Amazing chat with Chris Thompson, the best looking man in running, would you say?
I mean, if I don't now, then it's, you know, I feel like I'm doing a disservice to him after our chat. But yeah, probably one of the...
Gucci's Chris
regardless
Thompson.
Regardless of his whatever, credentials on the track, it's time on the catwalk that we're really here to talk about.
No, he brought so much that conversation, didn't he? I think actually when he talked about philosophy and what running hard can do to your life as well, actually really inspired.
Oh yeah, so, and I think he also talks kind of it's not really a lost art of running. That's a very dramatic way of putting it, but certainly a necessary learning in running about finding your cutoff points, finding that natural, as he was saying, when the red line mean, how much that deviates all the time, not just, you know, it's not like once you find it and then that's it. You know, you're always working towards a new point of like, how hard can I go, and getting to a start line and being able to sort of know instinctively rather than being told by a watch or whatever it is that you know, you can hold a certain pace and keep going, and that's what that feels like. I think that was, yeah, it's very interesting.
Listeners, let us know what you think of the episode. podcast@runnersworld.co.uk, and if there's any other subjects you want us to cover, you can let us know there as well. We're open to anything, Ben, aren't we? Pretty much.
Yeah, no, well, to the 200th episode is coming up soon, so why not email us some guest suggestions, people that we haven't had on,
yeah,
that you think we should.
Perfect.
Have
yeah.
podcast@runnersworld.co.uk, just let us know. Don't say yourself,
yeah, come
that's
on
not what
get over yourselves
on. Unless
get
unless
over yourselves.
Elliot, you're listening, yeah. Please email us.
He can come on.
Yeah, all right, fine.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. Thanks very much to our great looking guest, Chris Thompson, and to you, of course, for listening.
From two other incredibly good looking runners, thanks for listening. You can subscribe to 3 issues of Runner's World for just £5. Head to hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get this exclusive listener offer. You're obviously listening to the podcast, so thanks so much. If you haven't subscribed, please do. Tell all your friends. Tell them to Google Runner's World UK podcast. They'll find us on iTunes, Spotify, Google, all of the places. And thank you for listening. You'll hear from us next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.